Can be very useful. Okay, with not obviously. Oops. Okay, so jumping into the motivation directly. So as we all know, topological ordered spaces are capped, and so this nice topological ground degeneracy. So what is really interesting is that we have these states that look locally the same, but globally are different. And also the fact that these spaces are immune to local perturbations, right? So from the point of view of quantum information, is this first feature, right? This indistinguishability of states locally. That is interesting. So we would like to do is build some sort of quantum memory to preserve, quantum states from decoherence. And often this decoherence will happen because interactions with the environment that are local. Then if your states look the same locally, intuitively you see like probably they will be better protected against this decoherence. And actually that's what we do in topological quantum error correction, started by Kitaev, where actually we don't care about the Hamiltonian. And but just about these ground states, right? So it's the entanglement of these states that is a useful resource. And well, you may think, well, if there is no Hamiltonian, what do you have? Well, what we do is we measure locally our states to look for what would be excitations, right? Now they are not really excitations, but still they have the same structure. And by keeping track of this, how these excitations evolve, we manage to preserve the quantum memory. So actually, there are results that tell us that if the noise, if the interaction with the environment is not too high, too intense, then we can preserve the quantum memory for an arbitrarily long time just by taking larger and larger systems. Okay? So in that context, there is no Hamiltonian, of course. When there is a Hamiltonian, then you have some protection coming from the gap. Whoa. Okay. So yeah, doesn't matter much. So yeah, when you have the Hamiltonian, you have this gap protecting you from thermal excitations to some extent. So usually we talk about self-protective systems. And another feature is that if we somehow transform our system in such a way that we enact some operation on this global degrees of freedom, then the effect of the operation will not depend on the tails, but only on some global properties again. So basically, again, this absence of this immunity to local distortion is in play. And these ideas give rise to the notion of topological quantum computation. The classical example being the braiding of non-abelian anions. So we have these exotic quasi particles. The idea is that there are several states here, some global degrees of freedom, that we cannot access them locally in any way. That form this Hilbert space, and by braiding these guys, we're going to be able to perform operation on these global degrees of freedom. But this is not the only way to do topological quantum computing. So in fact, in topological quantum error correction, usually we don't have such nice anions. We only would get a trivial Hilbert space, but there are other ways. So we can introduce boundaries, what would be gapped boundaries in the condensed matter perspective. So the idea is that in these boundaries, some of my anions will condense, will disappear. Then if I have somehow a hole with this kind of boundary, so this is my system. Now this region, I can put in and out these kind of guys, okay, into the region without them being able to access this information, whether I did this or not locally. So again, basically what I'm doing is that now I can have superpositions of different anions here, right? Which before was not possible, and this gives rise to again a degeneracy, and then we can change the geometry over time, and again topologically get some quantum gates on this global degrees of freedom. Now, sometimes this is not enough; it's not useful because, so in particular, at some point I was working with some quantum codes where I just couldn't. I mean, they had some interesting properties, but they had a problem. I just couldn't introduce boundaries in any way. Basically, they would correspond to this Torrey code with three fermions, and then there is no boundary there. So the solution came from introducing this twist, which, as we will see, are certain effects that are constructed from symmetries of the animal. Okay. So let's introduce a bit what are anions. So first of all, they appear in 2D. Why in 2D? Because in two dimensions, exchanging two particles can be done in two topologically distinct ways. So in going from here to here, if I try to do it continuously, at some point the world lines will have to cross. So basically, they are topologically distinct ways of doing it. This gives a statistics that go beyond bosonic and fermionic, and we have topological interactions. So as particles grade, we'll get phases or more complicated stuff. And of course, they appear in topologically ordered systems. So an important feature of these anions is whether they have abelian or non-abelian charges. When charges are abelian, this means that if I know what the topological charge in two given regions are, then I know what the charge in the total region is, right? This doesn't happen in a non-abelian case, and it gives rise to this nice global degrees of freedom. So now I have several of these guys. And even if I know what their charges are, and if they are far apart, I will not be able to access locally. I will not be able to know by local operations, like what is the total charge of this guy, the total charge of these three guys, and so on. So this so-called fusion channels will characterize the global degrees of freedom for this configuration. Then computations, as I said, are done by braiding. And of course, for measurement, we should somehow read off what is the total charge of several of these guys, right? Because this will recover these labels. Okay. So in order to describe an anion model in an abstract way, we need three ingredients. We have topological charges. Okay, so this will be going to be the super selection sectors labeled by just some collection of labels. And then we have fusion rules that tell us what are the possible total charges of two given charges. So we will denote like this. Okay, so Q times Q prime could use to give several charges that in non-abelian case will be more than one. And finally, there are some braiding rules that tell us how this global degrees of freedom will evolve under braiding. An example that will be relevant for us, and that is particularly simple to explain, is that of Hessian anions. So here there are three sectors, the trivial vacuum sector, sigma mc. Diffusion rules are this. So fusion of two sigmas could give either the vacuum sector or psi. This fermions here are absorbed into sigmas, and they square to the identity. So the non-abelian part is this one. This tells us that whenever I have two sigmas, they could fuse into either vacuum or psi. This means that if they are far apart, I have some global qubit, right? So if I have two n of them, I will get n qubits if the total charge is not fixed. To describe the braiding, so we are lucky because in this case it's particularly simple. We just attach a Majorana operator to each of these guys. And so then we can read off the total charge of two. So if these guys are in a line, I can recover the total charge of two consecutive sigmas simply by taking the product of the Majoranas with this phase. And then under braiding, I just extend the Majoranas up to this phase. Okay, so pretty simple, so simple that indeed it doesn't give universal computation. You cannot get just any unitary by doing this at all, but it's still useful. So it's better than nothing. You can do something called distillation and get some sort of quantum computer with this kind of thing. Okay, now I will explain what twists are. So the first thing we need to construct for this construction is an anion symmetry. Okay, so this means, so I have my anion model with these labels and some rules of behavior. So if these rules are somehow are invariant and there's some permutation of the charges of the labels, then I have the kind of symmetry I'm interested in. Okay, this will be just some permutation. Then starting with this, I just imagine taking the two-dimensional world where the anions live, making a cut, and then I say, well, at a topological level, maybe not at other levels, but at a topological level, it looks like I should be able to glue this again up to the symmetry, right? Nothing should prevent me from doing that. So if I do so, what will happen along such a cut or across such a cut is that as charges cross, they get transformed, right, according to the symmetry. In a sense, in the topological sense, where this cut is kind of unphysical, right? So I could deform the cut and I still get the same sort of physics, because the two situations would amount just to somehow permitting the charges in some region without any further effects. However, the endpoints of these cuts do have a meaning, an invariant meaning, because if I take a charge and take it around one of these endpoints, I will permute it, and indeed, because I'm in the same place, I can compare them, right? So there is really an invariant meaning to this permutation. So such endpoints I will call twists. So let's see in a specific example what would happen. So I take the toric code with its four vectors, electric, magnetic, and the fermion. These are bosons. And I have diffusion rules where all the charges are squared to the vacuum, and taking the two different charges gives me the third one. Okay. From the gradient point of view, the important rule is this: if I have two non-trivial charges that are different, in comparing these two processes, right, in sort of whenever I need to compare two processes by taking two distinct kind of word lines across each other, I get a minus. So when it's a symmetry and we have one, we can exchange electric and magnetic charges here, and everything remains the same. So far, so good. So let's see the consequences of taking a twist that implements such a symmetry. So now I take my fermion. I split it into, so this is just some process, right? I take my fermion, I split it into an electric and a magnetic kind of component. I take the magnetic one around the twist, it becomes electric, then I can fuse it back with this electric guy. So I get nothing. I go back to the vacuum. I have managed to destroy this fermion simply by the presence of this twist, which actually this could happen far away from this, right? Then I can imagine such vacuum-to-vacuum processes where basically a fermion is moving from one twist to another. And it turns out that this gives rise to a topological degeneracy. Okay, so to see this, just consider these two processes. And we see that they only see each other at this point where one of the lines is a fermion, the other one is either electric or magnetic, doesn't matter. The thing is that the two processes will anti-commute due to this breeding rule. Okay, then there must be some degeneracy. So let's see how to implement this in a kind of, well, practice, I wouldn't say, maybe theoretical practice.
What do you mean by degeneracy? You're saying that the ground state on...
Yeah, that there are some global degrees of freedom related to this case. Actually, you wouldn't be able to read off, these operators.
So we could imagine we're on the plane?
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
So I'm just saying that these two operators, right? Yeah. Because simply because they don't commute. I mean, there must be some representation for this, right? So this is telling you that there are some states there.
Okay, so you would have more than one ground state for the system.
Yeah.
Sorry, on the plane or on
the Sorry?
Does it depend on the menu?
Like local, forget about the rest of the manifold, right?
So you increase the degeneracy if
yeah.
was already so.
Okay, so let's see how we would implement it into the lattice. So in the toric code, just a reminder, maybe there is one person in the room that doesn't know this. I doubt it. So in the toric code, we have qubits in a square lattice. This is the Wendt style of toric code. So qubits are on the sides. And we have these plaquette operators that form the Hamiltonian. They can have eigenvalues plus or minus one. Whenever I have a minus, eigenvalue, then I have an excitation at that plaquette. Okay, so my excitations are localized and the system is gap. To understand this model, the best way is to think in terms of string operators. So notice that if I apply an X operator here, well, it will anti-commute with these two plaquette operators and commute with the rest. Therefore, it will either create two excitations here or destroy them or move an excitation that was here from here to there, right? Similarly, for a C operator here, And we can see that if I take a product of C and X with the right geometry, I will just form a sort of string such that, you know, the product of these guys will anticommute only, or with, will switch only this placket operator, so it will create a string X addition here, and similarly on the other endpoint. And importantly, notice that I can only move excitations either from light to light plaquettes or from dark to dark plaquettes, right? So this means that I have these two sectors. In addition, so I can say that one is the electric and the other is the magnetic one. I could have nothing that would be the vacuum, or I could have both of them, and then I would have this permion. Of this reasoning makes sense because X and C generate the whole algebra of operators in the system, right? So if I want to introduce twists, I should exchange electric and magnetic charges. This means simply to add a dislocation, because at the dislocation, the coloring fails, right? So what was light will become dark. What was dark will become light. So far, so good. Also, clearly, these twists that appear here as pentagonal plaquettes will have to be in pairs because they are the endpoints of these dislocations. OK, so let's see. What are the rules that control the behavior of such twists? Let me go back for a moment to the ordinary theory code. So there, I can distinguish the four sectors, the four topological sectors in a given region by using loop operators. Okay, these string operators that are closed. But I just need an electric and a magnetic one. So each of these operators will have two eigenvalues, plus or minus one. And then there are going to be four possible combinations of them. So its combination corresponds to a topological charge inside the region. Okay, so for example, the electric charge will get a minus sign when moving around the region if the total charge is magnetic or the fermion. So we would like to do something similar in the presence of a twist. Okay, the problem is that now we try to create such a closed string. Suppose that here, this is somehow electric. I go around, it becomes magnetic, so I cannot close. I need to go around again, and then I can close. Okay, so turns out that I only have one such a loop operator, so I have two eigenvalues, and this allows me to label twists with two possible charges. Okay, so somehow I could take these four sectors and these two sectors as some sort of generalized topological charges, not exactly charges, but yes. At least topological, yes, in the sense that I cannot modify locally these labels. Okay. So we would like to understand what are the fission rules for these guys. We can also do so in terms of string operators. Remember that such loops are distinguishing what are the, you know, the two possible charges here, two possible charges here. So the product of these two loop operators can be deformed into such a fermion loop going around the two twists with a minus sign. And using that, without going into details, it's easy to see that this would be the fission rule. So if I take two twists with the same label, the total charge in such a region could be either trivial or the fermion. If they have different labels, then it will have to be either electric or magnetic. Okay, so completely different. That's kind of the non-abelian part. And I also have this rule that we already saw, that the fermion will disappear into a twist. And similarly, it's easy to see that when an electric or a magnetic charge goes to the surroundings of the of a twist, it will switch its label. Okay. So I should make clear that even though I'm writing fission rules, it doesn't mean that I have anions. In fact, we know here some of the labels will change as I braid these guys, and this wouldn't happen with anions, right? Also, notice that if I just select the a single label for the twist, I will recover exactly the fission rules that we saw in the icing case. Okay, so we have that two twists will fuse into fermion or trivial. And these guys are absorbed.
Is there a reason why you got the Ising rules and not another convolutional model?
A reason. In what sense?
I mean, did do you expect to get this particular model and not another model?
No, I have no expectations.
Is there something about the Latin geometry or something about the particular Torrey code that you started with that, I guess.
Probably there is, but I wasn't particularly expecting, or I mean, maybe there is a very good answer to that. But
you can write the Z2 Torrey code if you want press U1 transform theory. If you gauge the Z2 that interchanges them, then you can show that you get an I theory of I. This is the theory where that Z2 is not gauged.
You still have the Okay, so we only need to work out the rating, right? We would expect that probably we will get the same as in the Ising case, and indeed we do. So the best way to do it is to just find some Majorana operators. And we can do so by constructing these open string operators. Okay, now not closed. All of them starting and ending in the same place. Okay. So the idea is that whenever I take a product of an even number of them, I will get a closed loop operator. So one can check that they satisfy, you know, all the algebraic relationships that they should. And moreover, now I can compute the gradient of the twist simply by following. You know, keeping track of what happens to these loop operators and comparing them with the original ones. So what one finds is that the effect of braiding is expected to extend the Majoranas with this minus sign. Everything works out. And you can see that starting with an abelian model and introducing these effects, we have managed to get something that works as a non-abelian anion model. An important difference is that, so for anions, we can, in principle, compare two processes, okay, with a different kind of paths for the anions. And there will be, we will be able to write down some relative phase between these two processes. Here, in principle, it doesn't make sense to have such a thing. So there, the difference with anions would be that we cannot make like interference experiments, okay, in that sense. Okay, good. So, conclusions. We have seen that anion symmetries can be very useful as they allow us to introduce defects that increase the computational power of such topologically ordered spaces. I would like to comment on a few, you know, related results, not exhaustive at all. So most importantly, Kitaev and Kong gave classification of general defects in two dimensions. So twist would be a very small really part of this, because here they are considering general boundaries between two phases, and then how these boundaries could meet in point defects, right? Which would be twist in particular cases. Another maybe in this case a particular case of twist is the whatever the anion model you have, even if it doesn't have any symmetries, you can always take several copies, several layers of that. And then you have the obvious symmetry of permuting layers, right? So if you do so these guys call these genons. I think it's a nice name. So, and they saw that in a particular case, you can get universal topological quantum computing starting from layers which are not universal, okay? Another nice idea, this possibility that maybe one can relate these effects to condensation of anions on a line. And well, there was this paper last week discussing twist in three-dimensional models where now the effect would take the form of a loop, and then you can consider what happens, you know, whether these loops are tangled or not, doesn't matter, and so on. And well, there is much more stuff out there. Yeah, so thank you.
I just wanted to comment that the Kitaev Kong thing is not totally general.
Well, no, it's not totally general.
For time-Wilson variance.
Yes, absolutely.
It's
yes.
An open question.
Yes, I didn't mean to say, I wanted, I didn't use the right word. Yeah.
So I did not understand the fundamental difference between a defect and an anion.
Well, as I was saying, at least at the very least, you know, this interference thing you wouldn't be able to do. Also, they are not excitations of the system, right? If that worries you.
But that doesn't worry me.
Yeah, no, exactly. That.
But if we could create a superposition of defects.
What you could do is you could melt, or you could somehow gauge out this symmetry, right?
But
so
you cannot define the overall phase of the gradient, right?
Yes, but no, but I'm saying that you could go beyond what I was describing, right? And you could somehow condense these defects, so to say. And then, but then you would have something different.
Yeah.
It would be a different thing. At this
right, but the defect, in principle, we want to think that this is a lattice with some physical defect. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
But if we could just have a superposition of two defects, because we,
yes.
Because the support can be brought into a superposition.
Yes, but what I mean, the thing is that you can locally distinguish these guys. So I mean, in a topological sense,
okay, so they are not topologically protected.
It's like superposing anions. You can do it, but it's not topologically protected unless you use some sort of trick, like introducing, you know, boundaries or something.
I see. All right, thanks.
So maybe a related question is, in the actual lattice model, this was some kind of lattice defect. So what is the difference between the lattice defect corresponding to sigma plus and the lattice defect corresponding to sigma minus? How do I know that I'm making one or the other?
No. So, no. No.
Was that a comment or an answer?
Answer is coming now. That was a reaction. So the dislocation will give you the twist. Then that twist can have two different charges, but that's a matter of the state of the. So one, you know, one thing is a configurational, so to say, no, like which Hamiltonian you are choosing, if you want, if there is a Hamiltonian, and the other one is really about the state.
So there's some charge bound to the end point of the lattice.
Yeah.
Okay. Which determines. So why can't you put them in a superposition then, of the two charges?
Well, in that case, it would be just having. It would be the same as having the superposition of two anions. It's the same thing because you saw it's.
Make it clear.
Is it conceivable that you can, to this, related to Liouville's question, that you can get Fibonacci anion by some generalized cuts, for example?
I believe there are probably obstacles to do something. Probably Nathan knows better.
I mean, I think no. I'm not.
But maybe.
Okay, maybe we should discuss
Okay.
Fibonacci anions over lunch there.